Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen Mugabe-Nawo, and welcome to episode 56 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Do you want to do more with less in your business? In this interview, you will discover the specific steps my guest took to automate his entire business. He reveals how he got his team to be more effective and deliver better results with way less effort. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step by step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Calvin M. Brown, and he is the CEO of Investment Homes Direct. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Owen. How are you?
So let's get started. The whole idea of this interview is to get guests on here who have been able to systematize their business so that it actually now runs without, in your case, without your own involvement. And let's talk about some mind-blowing results that you now experience as a result of, going through the process of systematizing and automating your business.
Right. Well, I tell you, the most mind-blowing thing for us is our ability to do more with less. What used to take us 15, 16 employees and a lot of involvement to do now takes, through the process of automating and systemizing the business takes, about half of that and about half of that involvement. So to for us, the biggest thing we've experienced is just our ability to do a lot more with a lot less.
Wow, that's awesome. And so how would you say your company has been transformed as a result of systematizing the business?
The biggest thing that's transformed for us is, like I said, we're able to do more with less, which has resulted in our ability to counterintuitive to growth, but we've actually been able to consolidate and shrink in size and maintain the level of revenue that we had when we used to have a huge office and a ton of employees and a lot of overhead. So the biggest transformation for us has just been our ability to consolidate into a smaller sized company with a reduced overhead, but still maintain those levels of profitability and the levels of revenue. So
that's great. And so how would you say your personal life has actually been transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
The most obvious thing is that it obviously frees up time, for me to spend time with my family. I got married right in the middle of our business kind of growing and taking shape and taking form. And, I spent a lot of time, working long hours and showing up early and staying late. And now that things are running a little bit more smoothly and kind of on autopilot, it frees up a lot of time for me to do things, with my family and spend time with my wife. And, we're actually expecting a baby here in the next couple of months. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And, I'm excited that, I'm not going to be the guy who's, missing my child's adolescent years because I'm busy at the office. Till the wee hours of the night. So
that's great. And so, speaking about that, so what would you say has been the longest time you've been away from the business? Now that you've actually systematized it, I'm just curious.
Right. So you got to understand to fully understand the answer to that question. You have to understand that I enjoy work. I don't really have many hobbies. This is what I enjoy doing. So, it stresses me out not to be at work. But I would say the longest time I've gone without being here is probably 2 weeks. Every year, my wife and I and her family do a bicycle trip over a 2 week period in the summer where we usually ride about 400, 500 miles through either last year we did Maine, or excuse me, last year we did Anacortes, Washington to Spokane, and year before that we did Maine, Vermont, and ended up in New York. So 2 weeks is about the longest I've spent, you know, away. And that 2 weeks was without, you know, without a laptop, without a, you know, without consistent cell phone reception and Wi-Fi access. So that 2 weeks, you know, and the time of technology was probably more like, you know, several months for most people. So
that's awesome. And so just so the listener gets some context as to what your, you know, business is about and what you guys do. So what exactly does your company do and what big pain do you solve for your customers?
Right. Well, we're, you know, IHD is a real estate investment firm. You know, we specialize in the sale and purchase of single family residential investment properties. You know, we offer our clients market access to an inventory of kind of off the shelf real estate investment opportunities. We work with a team that consists of both acquisitions associates and sales associates. Think of acquisitions kind of like manufacturing.
Yeah.
Our AAs are responsible for going out and identifying and analyzing and negotiating and packaging these potential investment opportunities. And then these deals are our products that our sales team goes out and markets and subsequently sells.
So. Awesome. And so how many full-time employees do you guys have?
We currently have 9, including myself.
And, I mean, is the company profitable? And probably what was last year's revenue, you know, and what you probably expect to generate this year? Just curious.
Yeah, we're profitable, and we have been since our inception, which is pretty rare. Last year we did about $650,000 in gross revenue, and then this year we're projected to do about the same. So
now we've given the listeners some kind of insights as to where the business is and how it's systematized now, but we want to take it back to, you know, before we got to the point where the business was actually systematized. So, you know, take us back there and, you know, what was wrong at that point when you didn't have systems in place? I'm curious. Let's get some insight into that.
Right. Well, you know, for us, our biggest challenge has always been retention. It's been our ability to go out and hire, train, and retain, you know, quality people. Mm-hmm. You know, and a big part of that was for a long time, we weren't able to provide, you know, a new employee with any sort of infrastructure or any sort of system that helped, you know, kind of ensure and promote their success.
Yeah. Wow. And so what would you say was one of the lowest point during that time and describe how bad it got?
You know, I would say probably the lowest point because we've been progressing, you know, ever since then. But, you know, it was our first attempt to hire folks. You know, we were in business for about a year. Kind of bouncing deals off of each other.
Okay.
I had a couple of partners at the time. You know, we spent about a year kind of, you know, you do a deal, I'll do a deal, and we'll split the profit. And that was great for a little while. But ultimately, we weren't really generating any business revenue. So we tried to, you know, kind of as an opportunity to kind of generate some actual business revenue, we decided to go out and hire folks. And, you know, it was in the middle of 2008, you know, we were a fledgling company that was, you know, 5 guys sitting in a room, 1-room office. You know, we didn't have much to offer, you know, but, you know, it was amazing that the level and quality of applications we were getting from folks that had lost their job because of the economic crisis. You know, so we were able to go out and advertise and we were actually able to hire 4 or 5 people. And, you know, I think the lowest point for us, you know, kind of came after we hired those people. And within a couple of months, we kind of saw all of those people just kind of fizzle out, you know, because, you know, to me that, you know, the difference between, you know, a business and being just a sole proprietor is your ability to, you know, take what you know how to do and teach somebody else how to do it and give them the tools and resources they need to be successful. And at that point, when we weren't able to do that, you know, we were kind of starting to question, you know, is this a business? Is this a viable business from the sense of, is this something that we can grow and scale? Or is this something that we're going to be just doing, you know, on our own forever? So to me, that was the lowest point.
And in that same line of the story, do you remember, you know, when was your breaking point? Do you remember the specific thing that happened that you were like, nah, I can't take this anymore. This business has to be systematized. We got to change how this business is going right now.
Right. Yeah, it was, you know, it was after, you know, it was basically after that, you know, and we were in the middle of kind of this down market, you know, we weren't doing a lot of business. We were basically scraping by, you know, and the breaking point was, you know, if this is something that I'm just going to have to do on my own forever, then that's not really something I want to do. If this is something that I can turn into a business, and we made a conscious decision that this is something we wanted to turn into a business. But it, you know, if we weren't going to be able to do that, then we were basically going to, you know, pack up and go our separate ways. So really that was it. The lowest point was the breaking point for us. You know, it was when we, our first experience with hiring people and realizing that we were not prepared to, you know, to make those folks successful and retain them. So, and to us, that was really what a business was.
Yeah. And so now we've described what was happening back then. So what was the very first step you took to solve the problem you just mentioned during the lowest point of the business?
Right. You know, and I think that, you know, it's essential to, you know, building any business to me for the most part, you know, but the first step we took was disassembling the task of our business. You know, the process of our business was buying and selling real estate, you know, and to really figure out the business behind that task or the business behind the business required us to sit down and really disassemble it and analyze the parts. And then kind of start identifying points of automation, points that, you know, that we could actually, you know, either build some sort of system or provide some sort of technology that would help make that piece easier and more efficient. You know, and you hear these stories about inventors and, you know, most of them got their start by disassembling computers because they wanted to know how things work. And that same kind of thing applies to business. You know, and it's, you don't really understand how things work until you're willing to sit down and break them down, take all the pieces, put them out on a, you know, on a, you know, a table and kind of analyze them individually and go, okay, well, these are things that I can automate. These are things I can make more efficient. This is what goes into it. And it sounds intuitive, but it's really not, you know, it was a struggle for us in the beginning, but it was certainly imperative, and essential, to us growing our business into what it is today. So
basically you identified the individual tasks that were involved in your business so you could understand, you know, probably where to assign or delegate employees to. So that was the first thing you did. And also during the pre-interview, you mentioned how, you know, personality tests when hiring people and also the need to hire people who were self-starters. Talk about that. I'm just curious.
Yeah. So like I said, for a huge challenge for us has always been, you know, retention and hiring good quality people. You know, we kind of tossed around ideas on, you know, how do we find a good employee? You know, how do we find these people and how, you know, how do we, not only how do we find it, but how do we retain them? And, you know, so we threw around, you know, ideas of personality test and we threw around ideas of, you know, hiring a professional. And, you know, for a long time, we actually just used the old mirror test, which is basically if they've got a pulse and they can breathe, hire them. You know, if they succeed, great. If they don't, then oh well. And you know, and it really wasn't until we sat down and applied that same disassembly strategy that we used to kind of systemize the business side, or the process side. We applied that same strategy to our hiring process. And really sat down and took an associate and said, you know, disassembled them, not literally, but, you know,
what makes them work? Kind of,
Right. And what are the traits in this person that makes them good at this? So what are the traits in this person? And we started to identify some core competencies and some traits that, you know, we felt really, were kind of precursors for success. And those were things like, you know, being a self-starter, being organized, you know, having a personal connection to the company and to the team. And we took that and we kind of built this perfect associate, and we developed a, you know, interview process and a hiring process that was, you know, kind of built around, you know, hiring that person. So
when you say connection to the team, you mean like actually getting referrals from people who are already in the team, right? That's what you mean?
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, literally a personal connection. You know, we've had a lot of luck with hiring people that know other people. You know, we work, you know, we're a lot like a sports team. You know, we work well together. You know, everybody's success is based on everybody else's effort. You know, and we find that the people we've had the most success with, you know, bringing in and retaining are the people that have a connection to somebody already in here. You know, a lot of our training is kind of peer to peer. So if you come in and you're an introvert and you're not willing to, you know, actively go out and kind of seek knowledge, from the other people in the office, then you're most likely not going to succeed here. And, you know, we found that if we hire somebody's friend or you know, ex-colleague or something like that, they have that immediate connection, and it's just easier for them to transist and come in and learn and pick things up and stick with it. So
that's awesome. And so what was the second step you took to solve the problem? I think during the pre-interview, you mentioned something about having a pen and paper and a calculator. Talk about that. How that played a role.
Right. Well, I mean, the second step from the point of, you know, kind of taking everything apart, you know, and analyzing everything, you know, we kind of, you know, started identifying those points of analysis and started kind of putting pen to paper and figuring out, you know, all of the pieces of that puzzle that we could, you know, build technology to make that part more efficient. You know, an example of that was, you know, when our guys went out and analyzed a potential real estate investment opportunity. You know, we used to have a formula that we taught everybody. You know, it was, 80% of this, divided by 2 and multiplied by 3, and magically you got what the offer should be. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we went out and bought calculators for everybody, and everybody hand typed it in. And, you know, after a while, you know, we realized that, you know, somebody lost their calculator, so they weren't able to, you know, they weren't able to do those calculations, or they forgot the formula, or they weren't good at math or whatever. So, you know, we realized that, you know, we could build, a calculator that did that for them, where all they had to do was input the numbers and it output, you know, the amount that they should offer. So, you know, and that was an example of something that we did. An example of a result of something that used to be a manual process that we figured out, and kind of an easy way to automate it. You know.
Yeah. So, that calculation tool to know what offer to offer. Then I think you also mentioned something. I mean, I think this is also in line with digitizing stuff. But you created a database. Can you remember what that was and how that played a role in basically entering the information so that they always saw it wherever they were?
Right. Yeah. So basically when we started, you know, we developed all these, you know, and I guess I should go back to this. So our first kind of wave of systems after kind of analyzing all this stuff were mostly analog systems.
Yeah.
You know, they were Excel based. We actually had like a binder that, we used to kind of collaborate on deals where, an individual associate would get up and write the property address and all the information. And, you know, another associate could literally walk over, pick up the binder, look through it and say, okay, you know, associate, you know, Andrew is working on this deal. You know, and so basically we took all those analog systems and we built a digital system, put them all in one place, made it accessible from anywhere. You know, and we call it IHD tools, and, you know, it's comprehensive. It does everything from, you know, help our guys track workflow to analyze deals, to write contracts, to create marketing packages. We actually, kind of created this little plugin for, that automated our lead generation. You know, so it's a pretty powerful tool for us.
Okay. And so it was all manually done before, and then you now eventually digitize it. And I'm curious, what were there any other steps that come to mind that you guys took to kind of solve the problems at that point?
Steps in the sense of
what else did you do to? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. So steps in the sense of automating the process, or steps, you know, that would apply to just the business in general.
Actually, kind of automating and systematizing the business.
Gotcha. So, you know, other things we did were, you know, really sitting down and you know, and this sounds kind of, again, intuitive to think that you could hire somebody and not provide them with direction. But, you know, providing somebody with direction in the sense of, you know, not necessarily a procedural direction, but not, you know, but more what is expected of them. You know, so after we kind of got everything digitized and we got everything put in one place and we had all the tools and resources that the person needed to kind of, you know, operate, we had to sit down and really think of, you know, what do we want these people to be doing every day? You know, and you know, it was an easy thing for us because we came out of the gates making money, and significant money. You know, we
it's
were
real
doing,
estate, yeah.
Right. And, you know, we were generating revenues and, you know, $800,000 in our second year, you know, and it, you know, it was like a whirlwind. So,
yeah.
You know, and we never took the time to really sit down and go, okay, well, you know, we know what's going in task wise into this, but what's going in work wise, you know, what should be expected of somebody? What is this person's job description? What is this person's goal for the week? What is this person's goal for the month? So it wasn't until we really started doing that, that things really started to kind of take off. So, you know, that was, you know, after we got everything digitized, it was that really, you know, kind of took us to the next level. So
you guys also developed your own, custom software, right? That was part of the digitization of everything you were doing,
yep.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. And then also, I'm just trying to understand, at that point when you're making these decisions, you know, how did you prioritize what steps to take? You know, how did you decide what, you know, systems to create first and what was next? You understand what I'm saying? That way the listener can understand the decision-making factor that played a role into this.
Right. Well, I'll approach it and answer the question in two pieces. And the first would be, you know, how did we developed the digital software.
Mm-hmm.
And that started with, you know, again, after we sat down and we took everything apart and we looked at it, the first thing we started with was the tedious stuff, you know, the stuff that, you know, you need to do, but you don't want to do that was often overlooked. You know, things like, you know, lead generation, you know, it used to be where our guys would, you know, go into this online database and they would filter through and dig through all these listings and kind of filter the ones out that kind of fit our criteria. And that was very tedious. You know,
yeah.
It wasn't something that was, you know, it was probably the hardest thing for people to do every day was to come in and spend time just doing this tedious menial task. So we started with the tedious stuff and we developed this system called Spartan Leads that basically automated that process. It went in and pulled out properties that fit our criteria. It put them into a format that fit what our agents you know were used to seeing, and it put them right in front of them every day. They could click one button and it took all the information and automatically put it into to our system and you know it helped a lot. So we started with the tedious stuff. We moved on to the organizational stuff. You know, it's, you know, I'm kind of organized, you know, but I think, you know, I'm probably more organized than most people. A lot of people struggle with that. So, you know, we focused on how to make people more organized because we knew that was important. So we developed things like, you know, like our own database, that would allow people to kind of track their workflow and see what properties they were working on and, you know, in real time, see how many offers they were making and, you know, how many clients they had and then how many deals they had in each stage of the process. And, you know, once we got done with the organizational stuff, we moved on to the analytical stuff. And then we started developing calculators and other tools that allowed our guys to easily and efficiently and accurately analyze deals, you know, and that was a huge help too, because not only did it allow, you know, create efficiency, but it also helped to standardize that process, you know, and like I said, acquisitions for us is like manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're manufacturing cars, you know, you certainly don't want to have, you know, every car that comes off the line be different based on which person, you know, put the hood on.
You know,
it doesn't make sense to do it that way. You want a standardized system so that when the product comes out of the other end,
the same car.
You know, it's the same car every single time, and it's of the quality you need it to be, and it's based on the same, you know, design and the same specifications, you know, it's the same. So, providing those analytical tools really helped our guys, not only, you know, accurately analyze things, but it also provided some standardization and was a huge help. So,
awesome. And at that time when, you know, you were actually putting this work to systematize and, you know, and automate the business, I'm curious, what books or mentors actually had the most influence on you and why?
So books and mentors, you know, there's one thing that I've struggled to find in my life, and it's a good mentor. you know, that's not true. I have a lot of people that I rely on to for advice and whatnot. I guess I'll answer that question in two ways. So, books, I like to read. I enjoy any book that kind of delves into the, you know, or provides some insight into the business behind a business.
Yeah.
You know, I read all the Accidental Billionaire and Hatching Twitter. And
I love that book.
It's great. You know, and I just read, I think Hatching Twitter is a great story of a startup company.
Yeah.
Because it really, you know, provides insight into the fact that sometimes, you know, the business that you are starting with or the concept that you are starting with isn't necessarily, you know, what it's going to be by the time it's done. You know,
yeah.
I think they started with a podcasting service and ended up with Twitter, and
evolved
makes the point that you know, you can either, if you're doing something and it's not working, you can either pack up and go home, or you can, you know, adapt and overcome.
You know,
and I think that's that book, you know, provides some good insight that those guys did that. You know, and I think that's super important. So, I think more than books or more than mentors, for me, the most important thing that I've used as a learning tool is just experience.
Yeah.
And really being aware and trying to reflect on, you know, the things that have happened and why they happened, and, you know, really using, you know, experience to, you know, to learn from, you know, not necessarily to, you know, to be off-putting. You know, sometimes your failures or things you didn't do right can be kind of like, well, you know, I don't want to do that again. But, you know, for me, it's always been like, you know, what can I learn from that? Not necessarily... You know,
every failure is an opportunity to learn from it. It's kind of what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So,
and if we just talk about all the steps you do and just leave it at that, it makes it look like it was just all magic. But the reality is that, you know, there were challenges that you went through that you actually experienced at the time you were actually, you know, trying to create systems for the business. And one of the things I want to do is kind of talk about what those challenges were and kind of how did you solve them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, so for us, you know, and this applies, I think, to anytime you're trying to incorporate or implement anything that's new, you know, you're going to have pushback. You're going to have, you know, people that, you know, don't want to you know, kind of reluctant to adopt any new system. So I think, you know, for us, you know, the biggest challenge to kind of systemizing, you know, aside from coming up with, you know, how to do it, but once all that was done was implementing it and finding somebody that, you know, and getting people on board with adopting this new technology and adopting these new processes and procedures. And, you know, that, you know, one of the things that made it hard was, you know, we were very young. You know, I was 23 when I started this, and, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience. You know, a lot of the guys that were working in our office were friends, you know, and you go from kind of, you know, this fledgling company that's, you know, a shorts and t-shirt kind of business to something that's, you know, all of a sudden we've got, right. Well, we're still not there yet. We live in Florida, so it's really hard to get anybody to wear suits and pants. But you know, to a company that, you know, all of a sudden has a procedures manual you know, has this new technology that people are required to use. And so the hardest thing for us was just finding, you know, getting people on board with it. And the key to that was just finding, you know, one, finding an early adopter, mm-hmm. You know, finding somebody to take it on and kind of be the example. And I think that's, you know, that applies, you know, across the board. If other people are looking at somebody having success with something, they immediately want to join in on it. So, and then the second part of that was just taking away all the old tools
stuff
and resources.
You know? Just got rid of it. I mean,
literally we spent 3 months trying to get people on board to adopting our software, and we still had people using, you know, Adobe Writer to write their contracts and the calculator to, you know, analyze deals. And we literally had to go to every computer and erase the program and take up all the calculators and, you know, and throw the book in the trash can. And
you burned the ships. Yeah. It was that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's literally, yeah, it's that old, yeah. If you want people to stick on board, you know, they throw half the food off and, you know, you don't have a choice.
You have no choice, you're staying.
Yeah. So, but that was the biggest challenge for us, is just getting people on board with it and, making sure people, started using the program. And the other part of that was just, you know, we had to integrate everything into the system. And that was another big part of it. We still had some stragglers that we're not adopting. And, you know, as soon as they realized that our payroll and everything was going through this system, that if they didn't use it, then we weren't going to know they closed on a deal, then they weren't getting paid. And they, the rest of the people that were left immediately jumped right back on board. So, go ahead.
Were there any other challenges that we've not talked about that you experienced at that point with regards to trying to systematize the business back then?
There's some broad, for us,
go ahead. If it comes to you later, it's okay. Go ahead.
No. There's broad challenges one was, it seems a simple one, but, we had this grand plan, this idea for this big software system that was going to revolutionize our company. But none of us were computer programmers, so we had no real skill set to actually build this thing. So, we had to go out and find somebody to do that. And, in the beginning, we didn't really have a ton of money. We didn't have, $100,000 or $50,000 to dump into a project. So we ended up finding a friend of a friend who cut us a really good deal. And, we got a huge, big, expensive system done for really cheap, and that was a huge challenge. And it's kind of a broad challenge, but it was a big one for us. So
what I get from that is too, is that if you're trying to systematize something, part of the process of trying to make that engine happen, you might have to, you run into other challenges that maybe trying to learn something new just to make what you want to do, make it happen.
Right. Probably, exactly.
Yeah. And also I'm curious, given all those challenges that you had to deal with, how or why did you even stay committed to the goal? I mean, there were so many challenges, but yet you stayed committed. So we're trying to figure out why or even how.
I think, in anything you do, commitment kind of precedes, success.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't know where I read it or where I heard it, but it's something that always stuck with me. And, you basically put yourself into a put your back against the wall and don't give yourself the option to fail, then you're more likely to succeed. And, it was never, it was never, it was a passion thing for me,
Yeah.
I really want to make this happen, but it was also, not wanting to fail, and I kind of have always kind of, lived by the phrase, like, you can't be scared to jump, but you got to fight to not fall, so it wasn't, anything, other than just really not wanting to give up and kind of seeing the opportunity and continually wanting to take the next step forward. So,
yeah. And so we've talked about how the steps you took to systematize the business and also some of the challenges and how you dealt with them. So at this point in the story now, I want to find out, at what point were you, did you feel like the business was systematized and it was able to run without you. Do you remember the point in the story where you felt that way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we launched IHD Tools, which kind of took care of the task side of the business, you know, which was a huge help and a huge step in the direction of automation and really getting it to kind of run on autopilot.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until we sat down and started to provide job descriptions to people, really, you know, convey to people what was expected of them, what their role was. You know, that things really started to kind of, okay, we don't need to be here as much, or okay, I don't need to be as involved in each and every one of these transactions I used to be. That was a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of making people aware of what, you know, is expected of them and then giving them the tools to achieve that. Yeah. That was huge. You know, the second thing that was big was, you know, experience. You know, all of this stuff kind of revolved around the idea that we needed to retain people.
Yeah.
And as people gained more experience, obviously they leaned less on me as the business owner to help them out with deals and getting things closed. And so as our associates gained experience, that helped a lot. And the you know, the third thing was
I think you mentioned something about self-monitoring and self-tracking tools for each associate at that time.
Yeah, you know, that was a big part of our IHD Tools was just, again, making people aware of where they were at, you know, where they were. You know, we used to, you know, keep stacks of paper on our desk and, you know, somebody'd have to go in and count how many offers they made. And part of the system was to put in front of them in real time, you know, how much, you know, what their production level was. And that helped a lot too. But, you know, that kind of goes back to making people aware of what they're supposed to be doing and then providing them the tools to kind of track and achieve those goals. So
awesome. And so, I mean, now we've shared how you systematize the business. I think the listener probably wants to go behind the scenes to kind of look at how, you know, what are different parts of the business or the different systems that you have in place in the business. So I guess in order to answer this question, I want to pose this analogy. So imagine you had this conveyor belt, right? On one end of the conveyor belt is, you know, somebody who's probably looking to buy an investment property or whatever. And then on the other part of this conveyor belt is that same person has been transformed into a customer's raving about you guys, telling everybody about you guys. But when that person goes through this, the conveyor belt, there are things happening behind the scenes in your business to make that happen. What I want you to do is kind of give the listener kind of that, you know, behind the scenes, what's going on?
Gotcha. Well, I think we talked a little bit before about, you know, that we operate in kind of two different departments, for lack of a better word. And the first is acquisitions and the second is sales. Our acquisitions department, again, is kind of like manufacturing for us. They go out and they identify and analyze and negotiate and package these deals. It's the same as, you know, somebody putting together, you know, a computer, you know, somewhere behind the scenes, somebody goes out and collects all the pieces and parts and puts them in a case and snaps it all together and puts it in a box. So that's a big behind the scenes, you know, things that happens for us is the actual process of going out and finding and analyzing these deals. Hopefully that answers your question.
I'm trying to really piece it together. So there's a part of it that is people going out there to find the deal. So you have a system for that, and so they're finding the deals. And so when the deals come in, I'm also curious, there must also be another part where you guys are actually turning those deals into something more profitable. Maybe it's by rehabbing them or whatever, and then maybe there's another part where you guys are selling. I'm just trying to give the listener kind of a whole picture of what's really happening.
Right. I mean, so I don't, maybe I'll start at the beginning, but basically, you know, what we do is we, once we package this property, you know, we put a markup on it and then we in turn, sell it to one of our clients. You know, so I'm not really following your question.
Okay. Let me see if I can make it clear. So
yeah.
there is a part of the system. Okay, going back to how what the business model is that you're finding properties and then you're selling. You know, you're doing rehabs to these properties, right? Is that the case?
No. We don't do any work to any of the properties. What we do is our service is providing our clients with a off-the-shelf experience when it comes to buying an investment property. So they actually don't have to go out and find these deals or analyze these deals and put together the data and put together all the analysis and negotiate. And, you know, they come to us and they literally, you know, I use the analogy of, you know, if you wanted to buy a TV, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could go out and, you know, you could fly to China and you could buy all the pieces and you could ship them back to the States and then you could assemble it all and solder all the wires and, you know, build a case for it and then plug it in and watch it. At some point, somebody figured out that wasn't a very efficient way to do things. So, you know, people started manufacturing TVs, you know, and then they figured out that, you know, it's probably not very efficient for us to sell these TVs ourselves. So, you know, we're going to sell them to Walmart and Walmart's going to, you know, provide the kind of the off the shelf experience for buying that TV. And, you know, if you apply that same concept to real estate, that's exactly what we do.
Awesome. Thanks for clarifying that. And yep. So I think we kind of talked about the systems you have in place. I was about to ask you, you know, what systems you have to enable your employees know exactly what you do. What they do, and I think you mentioned the job description thing, the software you guys had in place, and then I think one thing that we didn't talk about was kind of how the employees hold themselves accountable.
Right. Yeah. So they all have goals that they're supposed to encouraged to strive to achieve. You know, we have an incentive plan that kind of forces each individual person to hold themselves accountable.
Yeah.
It's a group incentive plus an individual incentive.
How does that work?
How does it work specifically or how does it work?
Yeah.
So basically we set revenue thresholds, if the group achieves that revenue threshold or, you know, then they get a bonus.
Yeah.
And each of those revenue thresholds for the group has an associated revenue threshold for the individual. And if the individual achieves their revenue threshold in that particular month, then they get a bonus. So
awesome. And yep. You might also have talked about this in regards to the tracking and verifying of results, so that the employees deliver. But is there anything else regarding to how you guys track and verify results delivered by your employees that you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, this was something, you know, and hopefully this answers your question, but this is something that we spent a lot of time, you know, working on, and this is something that we're actually currently working on getting better at.
Okay.
And it kind of goes back to that breaking things down and looking at what goes into to success. And, you know, one thing we did was we sat down and we said, how many, what kind of input do we need to do to get the desired output?
Yeah.
And based on that, we set goals for everybody. And then we gave people the tools that they needed to kind of visualize and track, their achievement of those goals. So,
wow. And so, one of the things that I want to find out too now is like, now that you've, you know, kind of systematized the business and it's automated and it runs without you, like we've established. So if I'm curious with, you know, you have more free time, and I'm curious, which areas of the business do you now focus on now and why?
Right. Well, there's two main areas. The first is obviously, betterment. You know, this is a constantly evolving process.
And, yeah.
You know, the worst thing you can do is rest on your laurels and think that you got everything figured out, because you never have everything figured out. And so I spend a lot of time, trying to figure out how to get better. That causes a lot of stress on my end sometimes, because in order to do that, you know, ambition has this funny way of, you know, kind of making you never satisfied and not, you know, sometimes taking your focus off of, the good things that are happening and putting it on, how can I get better? How can I get better? How can I do more?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's, you know, that's ambition. So, you know, you got to deal with it. So I spend a lot of time just, you know, trying to think about ways that we can get, you know, we can get better. And in fact, I come up with things all the time. Some of them are great ideas. Some of them are not. Yesterday, I came up with an idea that I thought was would really help. You know, and today I sat down and I worked on implementing that, you know, that idea. You know, so a lot of my time is just spent on, you know, now that I've alleviated myself from having to do all this other stuff, you know, I can worry about, you know, what are the new things that we need to worry about? What are the new things that we can get better at? And really striving to get the perfect system in place. And that's the first thing.
Now you've picked my interest. Is it possible you share that idea with us? What is that?
Yeah. So basically, our tracking system, you know, we associate or assign a status to each property. Mm-hmm. So basically when an associate brings a property or identifies a property as a potential investment deal, we classify that as a lead. You know, and one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to analyze it and realize that, you know, that they probably isn't worth their time to pursue, or they're going to analyze it and realize that, you know, hey, this is worth making an offer on and seeing if we can make a deal happen. So we assign a status to that of either tracking or offered. Once that offer is made, you know, several things can happen. You know, they can get rejected, they can get countered, they can get accepted. Once it's accepted, several things can happen. So we basically have one row or one, you know, finite set of statuses for, you know, for each property. And we use that status to place each property in its correlating spot in each associate's property, you know, the pipeline, in other words. So yesterday I realized that that provides it, while it has done a great job, it also, you know, it doesn't allow us to you know, look at how many offers we made versus how many of those offers turned into actual deals versus how many got rejected versus how many we got countered on. Because once you move the status, by only having one status, once you move the status from offered to tracking or tracking to purchased or whatever, you lose the status that happened before that. So what I came up with was offering a primary status and a secondary status, and which would allow people to us to track the initial offer and then what happened after that initial offer was made. And I think it's going to help us at the end of the year when we sit down and analyze, you know, our input and our production level for the year. It's, you know, we don't have any way of knowing how many actual offers we made, because once somebody, you know, moves the status off offered, now it's, you know, it is forever something else. So, you know, that was a, you know, that was a you know, a big kind of
insight.
Insight. So, you know, we you know, I've developed a few programming skills over the years from all of this, and so I was able to go
you're
in.
You're carrying the state and the data that basically the property is going through different stages, right? And then as in each stage, if you move it to the next stage, it's kind of, I guess, kind of lost what properties he had before. But I think now, based on that insight, you're saying, okay, why don't we just carry those properties that it had in each stage with it as it goes through each other stage? That way, in the future, you can come back, even when it's closed, and see all the different stages and the properties and data that was involved with it. That's good. That's good.
That's exactly it.
I'm curious now, you know, what is the next stage of growth for the business, and maybe what big plans, you know, you have?
So, you know, the next plan for us is to scale. You know, we've spent, you know, for 5 years, seven years, you know, kind of building the system. And, you know, we're at a point where we have, you know, we have things running pretty good. So the next step is to scale. You know, and I'm working on two different strategies for scaling the business and growth. You know, one is, you know, actually kind of a different business model we're in the process of. And we've kind of had a soft launch of this system, but, you know, January 1st we'll have an actual full launch. We should be fully operational. But we're building an auction platform, a listing platform that will allow investors and sellers of investor-grade properties to connect and transact business. Nice. We feel that the future of real estate is online, and not only, you know, currently, you know, you have a lot of online marketing. I actually believe that the future of real estate transactions is going to be online. The banks have kind of set the standard for that and set the kind of the example for that, you know, through sites like auction.com and AltiSource and that are specific to bank-owned
properties. Yeah,
we want to apply that same strategy and make it available to the individual seller. So we launched a site about a month ago called vestview.com. That we hope will provide that platform and help take real estate into the future. So that's a big part of what I've been doing with my free time over the last year is developing that. And you know, we're excited to see that get off the ground and see where it takes us. You know, and then the other side of that is taking the tools and technology that we've built that allow us to operate and, you know, figuring out a way to either franchise those tools or make them available through some sort of fee-based subscription, similar to your system.
So. Oh, you mean like taking the software you've built and turning it into something where other people in your field can actually use the software? Is that, am I getting that right?
100%.
That's not bad. That's a good idea. That's great. Yeah. I love that. And so just as we're rounding up, you know, is there a way that, you know, can you summarize kind of, you know, because the listener who's listening to this is kind of trying to, you know, probably at that point where they want to, you know, systematize their business and have it so it runs without them. So what will you even say will be, you know, kind of like a summary of what you've shared so far? That way they have like quick bullet points as to, you know, how to transform their business so it runs without them. Just a summary.
Yeah. The most important thing is again, going back to really the ability to disassemble your business, take the parts, analyze them separately, and start identifying points of automation and areas in which you can make things more efficient. You know, and that's where it all begins. You know, and it takes a lot of thinking and reflecting and, you know, and analyzing, but it's well worth the time. You know, and it ultimately is what a business is made of. You know, a business is not a sole proprietor. To me, a business isn't somebody sitting at their house, you know, making, you know, basket weaving and selling them on Craigslist. You know, to me, a business is, you know, something that is scalable and something that is, you know, that is more than the individual proprietor that's running the business. So, and in order to achieve that, you really have to be able to systemize and put the process behind a business. You know, without that, you don't really have a business.
Awesome. Yeah. And is there a question that you were wishing that I asked you during the interview that I didn't ask you? And so pose the question and the answer.
You know what? In fact, you know, part of your pre-interview was a story of how we got started. So I kind of wish you would ask me that because I put a lot of time into thinking about that.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about how you quickly got started.
Yeah. I'll give you the abridged version because there's a lot of things that go into it,
that could be
a whole nother topic of discussion on what you learn from dealing with people. But so basically, I graduated college in 2006, got a degree in real estate, which was not my first choice, but it's kind of where I ended up. Got right out of college. It was 2006. It was, I mean, I don't know if you ever seen Boiler Room, but that was the job fairs that you were going to. I mean, that was the environment. People were, you're going to make millions of dollars and you're going to be this most successful person in the world. I mean, it was crazy. So I took a job with a national real estate investment firm, moved to Orlando, slept on a buddy's couch for like a month. You know, started making a little money, got my own apartment. Was doing really well. They had a you know, really good kind of promotion plan that I was quickly working myself, you know, through. And then like late 2007, things kind of started taking a turn. The economy started kind of teetering over the edge. The buzz around real estate kind of started to fade. So myself and four other colleagues got the idea to kind of jump ship and start our own company.
Yeah.
At the time, we weren't really thinking of it in the sense of a company. It was more like, you know, you buy a house, I'll buy a house, we'll split the profit, and we'll make more money working for ourselves than we were working for somebody else, which is kind of cliche, but I guess kind of every entrepreneur gets started that way. So we had no business experience, no money, no business plan. We were being threatened with a lawsuit from our former employer for leaving. You know, and looking back, this was insanely irresponsible, you know, not advising anybody to quit their job with no money and, you know, and try to start a business, because it's very difficult. It is not something that's for the faint at heart or for somebody that's not fully committed to succeeding. You know, but I guess at the time I was young and I, you know, living on the edge a little, I could survive on ramen noodles and soda. So, you know, and I guess every entrepreneur kind of has the same kind of story, you know, and I guess that yeah. most of probably attribute their willingness to take risk, to their success. So, so basically we started working out of my living room. We had, again, no business plan. So we spent the first couple of weeks kind of coming up with a loose business plan and decided that we needed to rent an office. That was partly because of our business plan and partly because we came home one day and found our old boss sitting on our couch in our living room. So we thought, you know, we probably want to relocate. we don't want this guy coming over in the middle of us trying to operate and disrupting things. So, so we scraped together a little bit of money. We borrowed some money from one of our, one of the partners, dads, you know, wasn't much, but it was enough to get us a little 500 square foot, one room, little office, in downtown Orlando. And, you know, as we were signing the lease, crazily enough, we had no office furniture. We literally had like one computer between the five of us. The landlord was like, "Hey, by the way, you know, the guys that moved out, you know, left a bunch of office furniture in the storage room next door. You guys are welcome to it." So we were like, "Yeah, sure, you know." And like no joke, there was five desks, five chairs, five computers, five phones, a printer, a giant whiteboard. I mean, it was literally like everything we needed to get an office set up and start going without.
And that was just basically the starting point of, you know, the business. And that basically takes us all the way back to where you now started figuring out that you needed to build systems. I like that. At least we give the listener an insight as to, you know, how it got started. And so what would you even say is the best way for the listener to connect with you? And thank you for doing the interview.
Yeah, no worries. They can go to vestvue.com. That's vestvue.com. And they can find our information there. They can also go to investmenthomesdirect.com. That's investmenthomesdirect.com. They can also email me at calvin@investmenthomesdirect.com.
Awesome. And so now I'm speaking to you, the listener. If you have enjoyed this interview, obviously you probably have been listening all the way to this point. So if you want us to subscribe to our podcast, that way you get aware of or made and notified when we have new interviews, to do so, if you have an iPhone, you can go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes to subscribe to the podcast. Or if you're on Android, you can go to sweetprocess.com/Stitcher to subscribe via the Android phones. And if you've enjoyed this interview, obviously you have friends that you will probably enjoy it too. So feel free to share the interview with them as well. And finally, if you are at that point in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck and everything just remains in your head, but you want your employees to know step by step how you get tasks done, I want you to sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. Calvin, thanks for doing the interview.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Anytime.
And we're done.
All right.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.